often imitated, never duplicated, occasionally intoxicated. It's the 90.5 WESA Social Club Podcast. It's the Social Club Podcast for January 16th, 2015. I'm Josh Rawlerson. I'm here with Rachel Carlson. Welcome back, Rachel.
I'm here.
We're halfway through January and the Christmas season is just around the corner. Are you excited?
Are you kidding me?
I hope
you're ridiculous.
So. Yeah.
I was just thinking the other day, I'm really glad January is almost over, even though it's like literally one day past the half. Wait, it's not. It is the halfway mark. So
yeah.
31 days.
We're closer to the end than the beginning.
Ugh.
Are you psyched for February? Is that like your favorite month?
Oh, gosh, I hate these 2 months. They're the worst.
Pretty much.
January and February. I just want to get them over and done with and get into March.
All right. Well, let's see if we can brainstorm some ideas for ways to pass the time in agreeable fashion, shall we?
I have a really good idea right now.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
So I magically made Matt appear from Espresso Amano.
And we'll mix in the harp sound.
Yes. He's magically here to talk to us about life as a business owner in Pittsburgh and basically anything else he wants to talk about. We veer off a lot. So if there's any passion projects you have.
Get in there. Matt, Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for
nice
coming.
Nice to be here.
Have you had your coffee today?
I have had plenty. Yeah.
What time do you start?
Start drinking coffee?
Yeah.
Probably around 5:30
right,
at the house.
Right.
Yeah.
What time do you wake up?
About 5:15.
What time do you go to bed?
Between 9 and 11, sometimes
okay.
Later.
But, all right, glad we covered that.
I don't run out a lot of stuff.
Well, the schedule kills me. Like, I hate to say, back in the day, when I was a barista, I can't do those early mornings.
No.
It was rough. I was just a zombie.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah.
I dragged.
Tiny little violin.
Listen. Oh, whoops. Crap. I forgot who I was talking to. I'm sorry. I'm just
That's all right.
Not,
no, continue.
I'm not a morning person. Once I'm up, I'm up. But, I mean, just zombie.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. But I can survive the morning shift thanks to my good friend Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to learn a little about this wonderful product today, right?
Yeah. So where'd you come from, Matt? What's going on?
Where did I come from? Oh, that's a long story, I guess. Maybe not so long.
No, I mean, the non-descriptive. I mean, we all – wait. Okay, let's
– Why are we here?
I was thinking where babies come
getting
from.
Metaphysical.
But anyway, Matt.
Yes.
What made you start a business?
Well, I opened Espresso Amano about 5.5 years ago. And before that, I worked for La Prima Espresso in the Strip District for about 5 years. Before that, I was – in college, a student, and that kind of thing. And I never really thought that I wanted to make a career in coffee at the time. I studied history and Italian, got a part-time job at La Prima, and then realized how much I loved coffee. And that kind of transitioned into a full-time job when I was done with school. Like I said, I worked there for 5 years in various capacities. And I just got to a point where I said, this is what I want to do with my life. Why not try and do something on my own? So in 2009, I found a space where we still are in Lawrenceville and took it from there. Started off very small, very slowly. Basically, my whole idea was I just wanted to every day brew the kind of coffee that I wanted to drink, which is something really tasty. That's my whole goal. I want to make coffee that I want to drink, which is what I still do today.
That's a good goal.
Yeah, that works. So it sounds like you got established right around the time that Lawrenceville was just starting to blow up. Was that about right?
Yeah, more or less. Maybe a little bit beforehand. But, I mean, the summer that I opened, which is the summer of 2009, mm-hmm. But I think it was in the same month, Round Corner Cantina and Tamari and myself, we all opened in the same 2-week span. So that kind of was like the –
the Renaissance?
Of that part of Lawrenceville. Yeah.
Yeah.
A Dozen was already there. Coca was already there. Piccolo Forno was already there. But I always tell people it's really weird to me to see so many people in Lawrenceville now because I remember not too long ago when I would just sit outside on a Saturday afternoon and just sit there for 3 hours and not see anybody,
I mean,
even walking down the street.
Matt, I walk into your store and it's slamming. There's times when there's hardly a seat. Not any. I mean, you run a great...
Is that something you cultivate? Do you want to have...
I think so. I think so. I don't know about you, but if I go past a business and there's no one in there, you're kind of hesitant to go in yourself.
True.
You know what I mean? So I like having the place full of people. And it makes it look busy even when it's not busy.
Yeah.
Right. Do you know what
that
I mean?
That is true.
Yesterday was our slowest day in about a year, and people were saying to me, "Oh, you're so busy," because there was filled with people, but it was actually really slow. It just looked
squatters?
Better than it was.
What do you do about squatters?
I'm fine with squatters.
Okay.
Yeah, for that same reason, because, you know, there are times during the day when we have a line, when it's bang, bang, go, and that's for a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon. But the rest of the time is kind of business comes here and there, so I'd much rather have a full store in the meantime than an empty store.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that getting into the coffee business partially by way of studying Italian history. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that was more of a happy coincidence. I mean, that's how I got my first job in coffee, was because I studied Italian, and the guy that owns La Prima was friends with people who were in the Italian department at Pitt. He said, "I need part-time help," and they mentioned my name, so that's how I got the job. So that was literally what led me to it. And of course, having studied Italian and studied abroad and been in Italy, I was exposed to espresso and cappuccino, so I had a knowledge of what that was like.
How often a day does someone order an espresso?
Oh, my gosh.
A lot. Yeah, a lot.
And how do you handle that?
I just go with it. Yeah. You know, I don't say espresso back, but it doesn't bother me.
That's very tolerant.
Are you like,
it's an easy mistake to make.
Oh, would you like an espresso?
No.
Thank you.
Will that be venti?
Or would you like a tall?
That happens a lot. We get people speaking Starbucks, and we just translate. It's not a big deal.
Where in Italy were you at then?
When I was an undergrad, I spent a summer in Florence.
Okay. Because I will say, the latte, I went for the first time this summer, and it really is like nothing else in terms of getting the coffee there.
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of the coffee places over there. Do you try, or over here, I should say, do you try and be an Italian?
In some respects. In respects to, like, we encourage people to have their espressos and their cappuccinos in, you know, ceramic cups, have them for here. Obviously, all the terminology and words, the whole idea is Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that we do that it wouldn't be done in Italy. We serve single origin espressos, which is something that's not common practice in Italy. You know, we will serve larger size lattes, which you can't find in Italy. But for us, our main important thing is not so much to be Italian, but it is to just be good. So we focus on quality, and everything kind of comes from that.
Isn't there like kind of an etiquette in Italy of when you can have cappuccino? It's sort of gauche to order at the wrong time of day.
Yeah, so it's people generally don't order a cappuccino after 11:30 noon in Italy. After that, it's just espressos.
And it's all standing. There's rarely any seats
it is.
Or
and
squatters.
And in some places, like the more highly trafficked touristy places, you'll pay extra to sit than you would to stand, especially if you're like right in the middle of a downtown area, which is interesting. I mean, I love that idea of going up to a bar, having an espresso, just standing there, taking a second, kicking it back. Okay, I had my five-minute pause, and I'm ready to go throughout the rest of the day. I always see people that will order an espresso and they'll sit with it for a long time, and I'm always like, it's an ounce. Yeah. What are you doing?
It's a shot.
Yeah, and it's going to get cold
in
a couple minutes. That's the thing I think of.
Yeah.
And then do you feel like, do you do your part in educating people then in Pittsburgh in any sort of way?
The way in which I don't want to like preach to people about, oh, this is how it should be drank or this is how it should be drank or, you know, I like to just present a really good quality product and let people have that experience in their own way.
And then if they ask you, obviously you're
a
lot.
Exactly.
And so you can answer any questions. So I would say, my question was when I was talking to you, you probably have a lot of people that come up to you and they're like, "Hey, Matt." And you're like, "Hey, I don't remember where I know you from." Okay, the store probably.
That happens a good bit, but I have a pretty, pretty good memory for faces and for names, but mainly for drink orders. So usually if I see someone I recognize, I might remember their drink order before I remember their name.
That makes sense.
The coffee shop nowadays is kind of this space where maybe in the past it was occupied by, say, a bar or a social hall or things like that. This space that's, you know, people call it the third space. It's not home, it's not work, but it's the place that people go. And a community kind of comes up around it. And the coffee shop, I think, serves that purpose nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that. Because it's something that people need. People, you know, people go in there at the same time every day. They see the same people. A lot of times we have the same conversations, but it's a nice thing. Yeah.
The weather.
Yeah. A lot of that. It's cold. Did you know that?
No.
It is.
Is that so? No. Huh. Interesting. Where do you guys get your beans?
We use several different roasters, mm-hmm. Oftentimes rotating. Primarily, we use a roaster called Counterculture Coffee, and they're based out of Durham, North Carolina. A roaster called Verve Coffee, they're out of Santa Cruz, California. Commonplace Coffee, which is here in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
They do an excellent job. Also, a roaster called 40 Weight Coffee, they're in New York, near Ithaca. And we just brought on another roaster called Cova Coffee. They're out of Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we've also used several other roasters in the past, too.
There's a lot like of coffee.
Keep it, but there's a lot of people roasting a lot of really great coffee, and I don't feel like limiting myself to just one.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, what stage in the production process brings the most to the cup? I mean, when you always distinguish between, like, country of origin, I assume that has something to do with it, but yeah. I can't tell the difference between Ethiopian and Indonesian or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that has a lot to do with it. I would say that probably what happens on the farm has the most to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I've heard coffee professionals say this, and I agree with it a lot, that basically what happens at the farm is what creates the quality in the cup, and everybody else along the chain, our main job is to not screw that up.
Right, okay.
So, you know, the farmers put a lot of work into growing this amazing coffee. Then it's a lot of times production, which is the process of washing away the fruit and mucilage from the beans. Because I don't know if you know this, but coffee beans are seeds of cherries, of mm-hmm. cherry-like fruits. And so they've got to get rid of that fruit and that mucilage on there. So there are ways to do that. So from there to exporting to the roaster to the barista, I think everybody's job is to preserve the integrity of the work that the farmer put in initially.
And this is sort of why lighter roasts are better for finer beans. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely, because they allow the flavor of the coffee to come through. Whereas when you have a really darkly roasted coffee that's really oily and you're tasting the roast, you're mm-hmm. tasting flavors that are imparted from the roast process and not necessarily flavors that are there inherently in the bean itself.
See, and that's something that I think is different between Starbucks and with you, and this being your business, and you probably educate your baristas then, yeah. and you want them to know what you're talking about, right?
Right, right.
Rather than, like, I just came in because I was in college and needed some dough, you know? I would exactly. assume it'd be a whole education. Do you put them through, like, a coffee boot camp?
No, nothing that formalized, but we do have, you know, training. Nothing that formalized,
okay.
though. But, I mean, there's a lot of training that goes into it. And I've been doing this for 10 years, and I still don't know everything. So I try and educate myself along the way as well.
So talking about growing conditions, does shade grown matter, or is that just a marketing buzzword?
It does matter, and I'm not an expert on this, so this could be only part of the story, but from what I understand, if you have coffee trees growing in the shade, mm-hmm. what that means usually is that there are other plants around that are providing shade, because coffee trees don't get to be very tall. So if there's shade, that means there are taller trees, there are other plants that are taller providing that shade, which means that there's a good diversity in the soil,
okay.
which leads to good plant growth.
And
good
I guess it's kind of about sustainability too.
Exactly, yeah. Elevation matters. I'm not sure exactly how.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah. So usually the higher the elevation, the better the bean.
So you couldn't have coffee grown in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
No, the climate's just not
okay.
right for it. I mean,
no.
You can, if you could artificially create that climate, you probably technically could. I think there's some coffee plants growing at Phipps.
Oh,
because it's a controlled environment, but you wouldn't have the soil, you wouldn't have all the other conditions necessary for really great coffee.
So is there like a terroir then?
Yeah, yeah. Most coffee's all grown around the equator and regions near the equator. So Central South America, Indonesia, Africa.
Have you been to any of these places
no,
to see?
No,
is that
not
like
yet.
A dream?
That's on the bucket list. Yeah, one of these days I'll get around to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be kind of awesome to see the whole process
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
Do you think that you would ever get into being a roastery?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of my goals for... Well, it was one of my goals for 2014, and it didn't happen. So we'll say it's one of my goals for 2015 is to get into that process.
Is this a heard it here first kind of thing?
I don't want to make any official announcement, but it's something that I'm looking into.
Because I was in the other day, mm-hmm. and I just had this passing thought. I wonder if you would expand at any point.
Yeah. I really have minimal interest in owning another retail location.
Right.
But if I were to expand, that would be the way in which I'd want to do it, would be roasting.
Would you ever expand the store because it's so busy?
Well, that's a real estate issue.
Yeah.
So I'd have to like buy some property nearby, which it has to be for sale. So.
And that's hard to come
by
in Lawrenceville.
Yeah, and in Lawrenceville, it's getting more and more expensive and harder to do.
Well, and I would think this is sort of a competitive industry in a city like Pittsburgh, or really anywhere nowadays, where in the 90s you could just set up shop and be the only coffee shop in a whole neighborhood and do just fine. But Starbucks is everywhere. Now, how do you coexist in that?
Well, the way I look at the way that most people like myself who own quality-driven coffee bars and coffee roasters is that Starbucks really isn't our competition. They're just kind of there, and they did what they did, and they kind of educated the public and got them used to the idea of, like, not paying a nickel for a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But what we offer is something totally different than what Starbucks does. Starbucks offers, like, the Starbucks experience, which is not at all what we do. Starbucks is more in the milk business more than anything. Although there is something that I want to talk about that they're doing that is kind of weird.
Oh, are you talking about the new coffee?
The flat white.
Okay.
Yeah, I really want to talk about that.
I want to hear about it.
Yeah, you need to explain this. What are we talking
about? So a flat white is an Australian term. When they started making espresso and cappuccinos in Australia, they would make cappuccinos very frothy, really foamy with a lot of kind of meringue-looking foam, like you get on a Starbucks cappuccino. And so to differentiate that from a drink that's poured with what's called microfoam, which is an integration of milk and foam into this sweet, velvety, silky, wetter style of drink that had a flat top on the cup. So your cup would be flat instead of having a big mound of, you know, a snow cone looking foam on it. They coined the term flat white. Now, that style of making coffee is pretty much how every quality focused shop in the U.S. and in Europe makes their cappuccinos, makes their lattes, makes their cortados. So that's really all a flat white is. It's not – when you order a flat white is really just not a big foamy type drink. So that being said, a flat white could be – to us, a flat white is a small latte technically, an 8-ounce drink with microfoam and espresso. It could be a cortado, which is a 4-ounce drink with espresso and finely textured microfoam milk. And so now Starbucks is selling flat whites, but they sell them in 12-ounce, 16-ounce, 20-ounce sizes. And I'm sure you can get all manner
and
of
And a 20-ounce is like a latte then at
well,
that
I mean,
point.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's
– And what is it they're selling as flat white? What are they –
So basically what product? They're doing is like trying to steam their milk the way that they should be steaming it anyways and calling it something different.
But that's what's so interesting to me to hear you talk about that because from working there – they would create – it's all in the marketing.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily
the
different style. Like, whoa, we've come up with this inventive way to make coffee now that no one's ever made before. It's always things that they've done and just naming it something.
Right.
So like whenever they would come out – when they came out with like the peppermint mocha or whatever – we've been doing peppermint mochas. They've been doing them probably since they opened because we've had peppermint syrup. But they were just like, peppermint mocha on everything. I don't even want to talk about the
pumpkin spice
latte. No. We're not even going to.
Let's not talk about flavors and stuff like that.
No. Yeah. But it's just very interesting to me because it's all in the marketing, the way that Starbucks does things. And I think, too, with you saying, you know, people coming in and wanting espresso, it's the same thing with people not knowing the difference. And that's a 7-Eleven thing too, knowing the difference between cappuccinos. Like I remember educating people at Starbucks about cappuccinos because they would think it was 7-Eleven, which is like, I mean, the closest thing you could describe it to is a latte, but it's not even
well, that.
It's
that's nothing. And then sometimes you have to step back and be like, when you get into a furor over all this stuff, you have to step back and be like, we're talking about coffee,
right?
Which is a very important thing, and it's really terrific, and it's really great, and you can really delve into coffee, but I'm not going to get mad at somebody for saying espresso because of that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, or not knowing what a flat white is. You know, I can get mad at Starbucks, though.
Or wanting a cappuccino and really wanting a latte type of thing.
In the grand scheme of life, it's okay.
That's good. And that's why you're a business owner, a successful business owner, because you are taking the time to educate. You have patience. And
say you're very even tempered for somebody that works in the caffeine delivery business.
Very
true. Built up quite a tolerance.
Yeah,
I know. There are people that are addicted to.
What? Who are these people?
I know. Are you addicted?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know what the clinical definition is, but yeah, I would. I would go into convulsions and die if I didn't have it. So, yeah, I guess.
It's
I
very
guess if
dramatic.
You want to call that an addiction.
And you feel different when you don't have your coffee then. Do you truly feel different when you don't? I'm a tea girl.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If I don't have a coffee by 8 o'clock in the morning, I have severe headaches.
Wow.
That no amount of ibuprofen will ever take care of until I get coffee in me.
Do you have headaches too, Josh?
I've had that happen.
That is crazy.
Mostly with me, it just takes the form of not being able to construct a sentence.
But they don't have rehab for coffee addiction.
No. Thank God. I'd be out of business.
That is very true.
Amen. So do you have a preferred method of brewing coffee at home? How do you like to do it?
I have to be really totally honest with you. When I make coffee at home, the only time I do is first thing in the morning at about 5 o'clock, and I'm not ready to really be too fussy at that point.
Right.
So I have just a very regular drip coffee machine that I make that first cup at home with. But I would say there are really great methods of making coffee at home very easily. The main components are grinding your coffee fresh, ideally with a burr grinder. Because a burr grinder will allow you to adjust the grind setting, whereas like a coffee mill grinder won't. You kind of can, depending on how much you turn the thing, but it's never really going to evenly grind it. Mm-hmm. Getting your water hot enough, which I would say 200 degrees, and most at-home coffee makers don't get it hot enough to extract all of the flavor compounds from the grinds. And that's it. So, and then you can take that and use whatever method you'd like, a French press, a Chemex, V60 pour over, an AeroPress, as long as you have good water, filtered ideally, hot enough, and freshly ground coffee.
How do you feel about cold brew?
Cold brew? I love cold brew. Well, I should take that back. I love cold brew as an idea. I don't drink it myself because I'm not a fan of cold coffee, but it is a good coffee.
Yeah. Cool. This is just a significant time investment.
It is. And
I was going to say, is cold brew different than iced coffee?
Well, it depends. There are two main methods to make good iced coffee. One is cold brewing, which is using cold water and coffee grinds over a long period of time to extract. Usually what you end up extracting is a smaller concentrated form of coffee that you then reconstitute with water or milk. And then the other method is an iced coffee method, which is basically you make coffee with hot water using half the amount of water, but you make it right over ice. So say your coffee recipe is, just using round numbers, 20 grams of ground coffee with 300 grams of water. You would use 150 grams of water brewed over 20 grams of coffee, but right on top of 150 grams of ice. So it cools it right away. And that method actually extracts all the flavors of the coffee. And the coffee product that you get is an iced coffee, but it maintains all the flavor properties as if you were to brew that coffee hot. Now, cold brewed coffee doesn't extract all of the flavor compounds that are present in that coffee. So it leaves behind a lot of the acids. You get a very, I want to say muted, but not necessarily muted, but usually tends to be very full bodied, very low in perceived acidity cup that a lot of people really like. So those are the two basic styles of making iced coffee.
I feel like I should be taking notes here.
I was just thinking it's the math. You lost me at the math. Like, I get it.
Hearing metric units in there and kind of glazed over.
But I feel like a lot of the terms that you're spewing out with coffee are a little bit more recognized nowadays in terms of people owning Chemexes doing pour-overs at home where it wasn't like that before.
Right. Well, I think what's interesting with coffee, especially what you see now, is, you know, people look at Chemexes and pour-overs and such and say, well, that's the new way of making coffee, whatever. But really, it's just going back to the way in which we used to make coffee before coffee became industrialized and before it became mass-produced. Hundreds of years ago, people would buy green coffee and roast their own in their homes. And it would be made by some type of system. I mean, the Chemex has been around since the 60s, so it's not exactly a new invention. And French presses have been around forever. I recently read an article, and I don't remember where it was, so I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. It doesn't matter.
Shoot.
But the title of the article is what stuck out to me, and it said, Civil War soldiers were probably drinking better coffee than you.
I was always struck by like the Lewis and Clark and all these pioneer accounts of like heading off into the woods in the 19th century with no civilization for miles around, and they bring bacon, and they bring like flour and coffee. Like no expedition ever left a populated area without coffee, as far back as you want to go.
Essentials.
Yeah.
You just missed the whiskey.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying, right?
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Do you have an alcohol you like to mix with coffee?
I don't. I don't. Although I did in October, we had the very first annual, it's Pittsburgh Specialty Coffee Week.
Pittsburgh. Please do tell more about this because I heard buzzing.
Yeah, it was really awesome. Nice.
I know. I'm good.
It was an awesome event. So basically, it was spearheaded by Commonplace Coffee. And they did a fantastic job. And the coffee shops and roasters that were involved each kind of took turns hosting little events around town focused on coffee. Regrettably, it happened the week after my wedding. So I wasn't really as involved as I would have liked. I was a little busy leading up to it.
Yeah, a little distracted.
But on the last night of Pittsburgh Specialty Coffee Week, we teamed with Wiggle Whiskey. And at an event in their space in the north side, we were making coffee cocktails. So I was making iced coffee with the method I described earlier of brewing the coffee over ice. And then they were taking that and making it into this delicious cocktail that was amazing. But I don't remember what was in it.
I bet we could find out.
I bet we could.
Always the mark of a fine cocktail.
Yeah.
Yes.
No idea what was in that.
Yeah. I'm sure whiskey was involved, obviously.
Good chance.
Do you not remember because you've had so many?
No, I don't remember because I have a bad memory.
Okay. All right.
You know what's good for that?
Coffee.
Yeah. Matt, thanks for coming by. It was fun to have you.
Oh, this was awesome.
This was really great.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I need some coffee now.
Rachel, is there anything else that we should put on the calendar quickly before this podcast is over?
You know, I scanned through. It's obviously a little bit low on events, but we do have the Science Center 21 Plus night this week on Friday, so you can head there if you want. They're doing a science of ballet. So if you ever thought about what the science is between it, they're athletes. Like they
no
were,
doubt,
I know
yeah.
You're giving me that look, like ballet.
I'm giving you the where is she going with this look.
But they are truly athletes in terms of what they do and the things they can do with their bodies, which are crazy. So it's very respectable, and I think that they're going to be explaining the science of things. So you can check that out. Always a great time over at the Science Center.
And plenty more tips at Yelp.com.
Of course.
As always. And you can find the show notes on our website at WESA.FM. Follow Rachel at Yelp Pittsburgh on Twitter. I'm at WESA. Josh, what about Espresso Romano? You guys on Twitter?
We're on Twitter at Espresso Romano and Instagram and Facebook.
Espresso with an S, not an X.
Espresso with an S or three S's.
If we learned one thing today, I hope that's it.
Right. True.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.